Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. And while I personally am an omnivore, I totally respect the vegetarians who listen to this episode.
Yeah, I am right there with you. We'll talk about vegetarianism a little bit, I guess. It's kind of natural in this episode, but we'll get into it. Before we begin, we are brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow for only $2 a month. You gain access to all of our bonus content, including weekly episode reviews, weekly written pieces by me, bad drawings, monthly bonus episodes, all kinds of stuff. Patreon has now added private RSS feeds so that you can listen to all that stuff now in your podcast app. Very, very helpful, because the Patreon app, although it has improved, is still not great. So that's great news for all you guys out there. We have a couple people to thank, Matthew.
Yay!
First off, Grant Norman. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, Grant.
And Old Peeny Can Joey Jojo Junior Shabadoo Snrub.
I never guessed old Joey Jojo would donate to us after what happened to him at Moe's. But that's special.
Thank you, Old Painy. It's an inspired choice of a name. Really like it.
Indeed.
If you want to help us out in any other ways, you can go to iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music. Google Play Music, give us a 5-star review, subscribe, all that good stuff. It really helps us out. Also, I am going to be posting our episodes on YouTube as well, on our YouTube channel, which is under youtube.com/TheSimpsonsShow. I know I know there are people who listen to things, long-form music and stuff, on YouTube, so it's there. If you want to go there and listen to that, there. That's for you. On to this week's episode, it is Lisa the Vegetarian, episode 3F03, originally aired October 15th, 1995, written by David S. Cohen, directed by Mark Kirkland. Let's see. Finished 47th in the ratings. Nielsen rating of 9.0. Approximately 8.63 million viewing households. Fourth highest rated show on Fox that week, following The X-Files, Football, and Melrose Place.
Aha, what happened to 90210 this week?
I don't know.
Didn't have an episode.
I'm not sure. I think Football is always going to be better. Okay. The chalkboard gag is, the boys' room is not a water park. No, it's not. I agree.
It is not. I mean, that can be very dangerous if someone slips and falls. Yes. Not to mention, they're usually fairly disgusting.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Couch gag is, the Simpson family comes in gray and, like, robotic arms paint them to look like they're how they're supposed to. I like it. It looks neat.
Indeed. It's fresh.
It's cool. Guest starring Phil Hartman as Troy McClure, in a great part, and Paul and Linda McCartney as themselves. They finally get that last Beatle. They had Ringo, they had George, now they get Paul. Of course, John Lennon is, unless they can summon the dead, poor John Lennon's not going to be on The Simpsons. But they've gotten...
They could hologram him.
It's not the same. Episode begins with the family visiting Storytown Village, which is an amusement park for babies. Apparently this is based on an actual amusement park that was very similar to this.
Great for the babies in the real world, I guess.
Yeah, well,
small children.
I believe it has closed since. It has not stayed open. But it is like an entire theme park based around like nursery rhymes and stuff like that. The whole place could not be more underwhelming. Like, there's the gag when they go in that it's only entertaining for kids up to 7.5. So, you know, Lisa and Bart, nope, no, you can't,
nope, you
can't sorry,
have
you
fun
guys
here. Will not have fun.
No fun here. Maggie loves it, though. She likes, open with, like, the three little pigs. Everything is animatronic. There's a lot of, and, you know, very kind of physical gags, so I couldn't really pull clips for it, but Maggie is overjoyed at all of this stuff. She is endlessly entertained. I did pull a little thing from Three Bears, just because I love what they did with the voices of the bears.
Somebody's been sleeping in my bed. Somebody's just sleeping in my bed.
Well, I'm sorry, but it was 150 degrees in the car.
Grandpa was said, they did say they were going to leave Grandpa in the car, but apparently he could not take the heat. I love that the middle bear is just broken. So yeah, you just hear, the effects they did on that voice was really funny. I mean, I had forgotten about that gag entirely, so it really surprised me. It's really good. Bart goes, I don't know if this is a callback or to the occasions where, in, what was it, Deaf Gardens, where Bart put lollipops under his shoes so he could meet the minimum height requirements.
Yeah.
But then, on this one, they have a maximum height requirement. Like, you have to be under the certain height. And
for very good reason, as we find out.
Yes! Bart limbos underneath the little, I don't know, what would you, guard? I guess is what it is. And he goes in on the little train ride and destroys a lot of the surrounding. That train goes really fast.
Yeah, right? Like, for a little kid's train, that would scare the crap out of them.
I don't know if it would scare them, but it certainly was not. What if they accidentally put an arm out? Like, there's no, they don't. But Bart is too tall and, like, hits several things on the way, which ends up with Mother Goose getting her head chopped off, which the kids love. So I guess it's a win.
So, yeah. Fun.
I mean, it's entertaining. It's
always good to take down those evil storybook characters.
I thought Mother Goose was a good character. Wasn't she nice?
She is. She is. That's kind of the joke.
Well, I mean, when you get older, they all seem creepier than they did when you were a child.
That's true. Probably because you're reading the real original fairy tales that were very disturbing.
Well, they were meant to scare children. Then we go to the petting zoo, which... I think that little advertisement at the beginning of when you walk into the park is inaccurate, because who doesn't like a petting zoo?
Right? Petting zoos exist completely on their own a lot of the time. You don't have to go to a theme park. You just go to a petting zoo because they're awesome.
Yeah, you get to, like, pet cool animals and, like, you know, pet a goat. Homer wants a goat to eat a can. It will not eat a can. You're barking at the wrong tree, Homer, if you're going to try and get a petting zoo goat to eat a can. Those are, like, the most well-fed animals in the world, because people are constantly just, like, shoveling pellets into their face. Maggie gets lost in a llama? Isn't that what that animal is?
They're pretty furry. Yeah, it's either a llama or an alpaca. I'm pretty sure it's a llama.
Llama or alpaca. But Marge does retrieve her. And then we get, again, all this is very, like... visual, so I can't. I did not pull Mary Make clips for this episode. There's a lot of visual stuff in it. We get a gag of increasingly cuter sheep as we get the adult sheep, and then we get the younger sheep, and then we get the cute baby lamb. And of course, the baby lamb is the cutest with the biggest eyes, and it's so tiny and cute. And Lisa loves it and is petting it, and that weighs in. Kind of, that's like the foreshadowing for what that sets up basically the rest of this episode.
That's true. If they had not been eating lamb chops later in the episode, if they'd been eating pork chops, it totally would have been okay.
It probably, no. Sliding doors, you know what they say.
Yeah.
So the family goes home. They had a nice little outing. They're happy because they got to pet all the cute animals, which, I mean, it generally does satisfy me too. So
that should satisfy everyone, I would think, but maybe some people just aren't up with the smells, because, spoiler, petting zoos smell awful.
They smell like a farm. Life.
Yeah.
They smell like animals who poop. They poop. It's fine. It's just poop. They return home to see that the Flanders are holding a barbecue, a family reunion barbecue.
Hey, Flanders.
Howdy ho, neighborino.
Shut up.
Okay, okay.
Ned, you're having a family reunion and you didn't invite me?
Oh, gosh, Homer, this is strictly a Flanders affair. I got family here from around the globe. Here's Jose Flanders.
Buenos ding-dong dilly dia, senor.
And this is Lord Thistlewick Flanders.
Charmed. A googly-doogly. I can't believe you didn't invite me after I painted those cool stripes all over your car. I know. I'll throw my own barbecue, the greatest barbecue this town has ever seen, and I'll only invite who I want. That'll show you.
Can I come?
Sure.
Don't!
Nice.
Why haven't we seen more of the extended Flanders family?
I assume because they're from pretty far away. I mean, I swear there's a one point where, like, his cousin moves in on the other side of Homer at the end of the episode for some reason. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously got family around the globe, so I guess not a whole modern Springfield. Maybe Ned moved to Springfield to be away from him.
Lord Thistlewick Flanders. Oogly doogly.
The only Flanders who's like a little embarrassed to be with the Diddlies.
He still did it though.
That's true. Because it's expected in their family.
He still did it. So Homer is excited because he's going to throw a barbecue with apparently Marge still doing most of the work. He's like, I hope you're up to it, Marge. And Marge is like, yeah.
Thankless work.
And Marge is actually genuinely excited as well. I think she's just
making stuff like this.
And seeing other people outside of a courtroom setting, I believe is what she says. But
it would be a great opportunity to get to know our neighbors outside of a courtroom setting.
Yeah, and this is at the dinner table, and they're eating lamb chops, and they're all, you know, Homer is quite happy, Bart, Marge, all quite happy with their food. Did we see Maggie eat the pork chops?
I didn't notice either. I thought it'd be hard for her to eat.
Yeah, probably. You need teeth. But Lisa, thinking back to the lamb she pet, is having a crisis of conscience.
Please, Lisa, I thought you loved me. Loved me.
What's wrong, Lisa? Didn't you get enough lamb chops?
I can't eat this. I can't eat a poor little lamb.
Lisa, get a hold of yourself. This is lamb, not a lamb.
What's the difference between this lamb and the one that kissed me?
This one spent 2 hours in the broiler.
Oh, but sensible bites. All right, Lisa, if you don't want lamb chops, there's lots of other things I can make. Chicken breast, rump roast, hot dogs.
No, I can't. I can't eat any of them.
Wait a minute. Lisa, honey, are you saying you're never going to eat any animal again? What about bacon?
No.
Ham?
No.
Pork chop?
Dad, those all come from the same animal.
Oh, yeah, right, Lisa. A wonderful, magical animal.
That's one of my favorite jokes of the entire episode.
Yes, that's really good. Homer is unaware that bacon, ham, and pork chops are all from a pig. Apparently that was based on a line that John Swartzwelder he had openly exclaimed how wonderful pigs are because such completely disparate cuts of meat come from the same animal.
It's true. I mean, you think that cows are great for something like that. But, I mean, all beef tends to kind of taste the same, whereas you get very disparate tastes with different cuts of pork. It's very interesting.
But I think this scene in particular does a really good job at kind of showing us that I'm aware of, like, any well-reasoned eater. Once in a while you think, I could be a vegetarian. You kind of have that... I've had that kind of thought process go in my head, like, should I be a vegetarian? And, you know, this episode does a good to show that, I don't know, that dissonance that a lot of omnivores have. A lot of, you know, people who aren't, you know, who aren't good people generally. They're nice people, but they don't think about the fact that every time they eat meat, they're not thinking about the animal that got killed. They're thinking, right. Ooh, this chicken tastes good. Or, wow, that steak is delicious. They're not thinking about where it came from necessarily. Like, along the line, they understood, yeah, I'm buying a part of an animal. That animal had to die. And there are some people, of course, that are much more like people who hunt and make their own food like that way. Like, they are intimately familiar. And farmers and other people who handle these animals, they are intimately familiar with the process. But a lot of people... just, you know, you don't think about it. And because it kind of does make you feel bad. Because, you know, like, I don't want to feel bad about, especially the fact that now that there are so many people that eat meat, the food industry is not good. Like, factory farming is bad.
Well, factory farming is bad as long as you pay attention to it. If you even take the tiniest look at it, you're like, wow, we probably shouldn't be doing that.
And not even the animals get mistreated because they do get mistreated, but the fact that the animals so close together can get diseases and then they give them unbelievable doses of antibiotics and stuff like that to try and stop it, and then the diseases get stronger and then we get some plague that wipes out all pigs, because
not to mention the poop.
Yeah, there's a lot of poop too. I don't want to get... You've
never thought about how hundreds or thousands of animals, how much they, you know, poop in a day. It's
a lot.
It's terrifying, to be honest.
I don't want to talk too much about that, because this episode is not really about that. It is more about Lisa coming to terms with her family. I think that is... It is... Like, Lisa... This is, like, right here, she makes that quick decision, like, no, I can't eat meat anymore. Like, it's a thing that I can't handle that dissonance in my head anymore. And she's made that decision. It doesn't help that her family is not too sensitive about that decision, at least at first. But I think that is also what this episode is about. But we go to commercial after that. It's a very short first act.
Indeed. And when we come back, Lisa makes the comment that compared to home, the public schools are a haven of enlightenment. And considering this is Springfield Elementary we're talking about here, that's really saying something. It's kind of terrifying. Of course, Springfield goes out of its way to prove her wrong almost immediately. They start the day by dissecting a worm. And, well, what's a nice way to put this? Once again, Ralph messes up.
Miss Hoover?
Yes, Ralph, what is it?
My worm went in my mouth and then I ate it. Can I have a new one?
No, Ralph, there aren't any more. Just try to sleep while the other children are learning.
Oh, boy, sleep! That's where I'm a Viking.
Sorry, anytime Ralph does something great,
I mean, that's really good. Can I have a new one?
Nope, sorry, we only had...
No, we had enough worms. And Lisa has a problem with the worm, but honestly, worms don't really sense pain like higher animals.
It's true. They have a nervous system, but not... They don't have a brain, so it's not something that, say, a mammal would feel. So,
like,
one of those things. Go ahead.
You can cut up a worm a million times. Like, it knows you're doing it, but it isn't really feeling pain in, like, the way that you would think of, like, what we think of pain, or what, like, if a dog is hurt. Like, it's not that kind of... It's, like, just, like, aversion. It's not really even... Like, I've never felt guilty about baiting a hook with a worm.
That's true. There's actually a newer episode in season 20-something, I think it is, where Lisa starts eating bugs because she eats lunch with Lunch Lady Doris and tries out a beetle mush that she really enjoys. And she joins a whole bunch of people who are eating bugs, and eventually she... settles back down to not eating bugs because she's worried that bugs have feelings like that when she has a horrible dream. So I don't think Lisa is really into the science of whether things feel pain. She just goes with her emotions.
It's all about destruction.
Unlike Lisa.
I know. Yeah. Well, destruction of life. I think that's her, like, you're killing something and that's not good. It doesn't really matter what it is.
Right. So as soon as Lisa says that she can't dissect her worm, Miss Hoover acknowledges her objection and immediately presses the independent thought alarm.
the silent alarm.
It only rings in Principal Skinner's office. After this, we see Lisa at the cafeteria where she's having lunch, and she says that, I believe you're required to offer a vegetarian alternative, to which Lunch Lady Doris responds, have a bun. It's great in bunly goodness. And I almost captured this, but I got a lot of really long clips, so I slowly left it out. Lisa says, do you remember when you lost your passion for this work? And Lunch Lady Doris doesn't even reply. She just hits the independent thought alarm, which apparently that's something that's installed throughout the school. You don't want kids, you know, thinking too much. That leads to bad outcomes for their corporate masters.
Mm-hmm.
But this, of course, goes right to Principal Skinner.
Uh-oh. Two independent thought alarms in one day. The students are overstimulated. Willie, remove all the colored chalk from the classrooms.
I warned you! Didn't I warn you? That colored chalk was forged by Lucifer himself!
Apparently it's the colored chalk. That's what's really, you know, throwing it out there for him. Sorry. Of course, we go from that to Itchy and Scratchy, Esophagus Now, which is essentially just a regular old Itchy and Scratchy cartoon, but it involves Scratchy eating a bit of his stomach, and just immediately it keeps coming out, and he keeps eating it over and over again.
It's really grotesque, honestly. even for Itchy and Scratchy standards, it's self-cannibalism. Auto-cannibalism is...
you want to talk about things that don't feel pain. Apparently, Scratchy does.
Yes.
Yeah. Lisa sees that this is promoting violence against animals because, well, you know, it kind of is. Bart chides her for this and says, cartoons don't have messages. They're just funny stuff that happens. Which,
it's once in again, this episode,
jabbed themselves.
And this episode in particular is pretty good. Even though this isn't the worst of the preachy episodes, even though it is about vegetarianism, ostensibly.
It is, but I think we'll get more this more when at the end. But I think this episode's idea is that vegetarianism is great, but keep it to yourself, kind of thing. You feel free to talk about it, but not all the time. Don't go CrossFit with it.
I was good. Well, I have a point later on. We can bring that up later.
Okay, good. But immediately after this, Bart is hit by a door because he thinks it's funny when people are hit.
It is
pretty. Look, kids, I just got my party invitations back from the printers.
Come to Homer's BBBQ. The extra B is for BYOBB.
What's that extra B for?
That's a typo.
Dad, can't you have some other kind of party? One where you don't serve meat?
But all normal people love meat. If I went to a barbecue and there was no meat, I would say, yo, Goober, where's the meat? I'm trying to impress people here, Lisa. You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad.
You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad.
Friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad. You don't win friends with salad.
Mom!
You don't win friends with salad. I didn't mean to take sides. I just got caught up in the rhythm.
One, I love Marge there because Marge is great, and two, I love that they actually used the stereo separation, so it actually sounded like they were leaving the room.
Yes, it's
they
really
don't
good.
Do that a whole lot, but it's great.
The sound in this episode is actually really good. Yeah, they do a lot of the stereo stuff, and one that invitation is so good. The BYOBBBQ, and then the extra B is for BYOBB, and that's layers upon layers, and the Marge. Like that, because they go off screen. That's the beauty of that little gag. It's like they go off of the conga line off screen, and you can hear it in that clip. And then they come back, and then Marge just is there spontaneously. So good. This episode, I don't think it always gets the credit it deserves for how funny it is.
No, that's the thing is, you think at least the vegetarian, always that preachy episode about, you know, vegetarianism and accepting others and that sort of thing, but you don't realize there are this whole barbecue. I don't even know if I would call it a B plot, but it's really funny. Everything about the barbecue is funny. Every little thing. It's just great. But after the conga line, we go back to school the next day with Lisa, who they are shown a movie after a brief speech from Principal Skinner about an agitator named Lisa S. Oh, sorry. That's too obvious. We'll go with L. Simpson.
That's just.
Yeah.
Oh, Skinner.
Yeah, he's terrible. But they get to watch a wonderful film from the Meat Company called Meat and You. This is a long one, guys, so strap in.
Nothing beats a stroll in cattle country. Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such educational films as 2 - 3 = -Fun and Firecrackers, the Silent Killer.
Mr. McClure?
Oh, hello, Bobby.
Jimmy, I'm curious as to how meat gets from the ranch to my stomach.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Slow down, Jimmy. You just asked a mouthful. It all starts here in the high-density feedlot. Then when the cattle are just right, it's time for them to graduate from Bovine University. Come on, Jimmy. Let's take a peek at the killing floor. Don't let the name throw you, Jimmy. It's not really a floor. It's more of a steel grating that allows material to sluice through so it can be collected and exported. Getting hungry, Jimmy?
Mr. McClure, I have a crazy friend who says it's wrong to eat meat. Is he crazy?
No, just ignorant. You see, your crazy friend never heard of the food chain. Just ask this scientician. He'll tell you that in nature, one creature invariably eats another to survive. Don't kid yourself, Jimmy. If a cow ever got the chance, he'd eat you and everyone you care about.
Wow, Mr. McClure, I was a grade A moron to ever question eating meat.
Yes, you were, Jimmy. Yes, you were.
You're hurting me.
They can't seriously expect us to swallow that tripe.
Now is a special treat courtesy of our friends at the Meat Council. Please help yourselves to this tripe.
I cut out most of the eating sounds there because it made me a little sick.
Tripe?
They're eating raw tripe. I just...
Is this... I thought it was like boiled.
Maybe it's boiled.
Which
either
is
way.
Not
it's just
much better. Yeah. Okay.
It's vile.
There's so much to do. That video is so good. So, like, the one, they do... Obviously, they do the stuff they do with a lot of these, like, Troy McClure old, like, educational... vaguely educational videos with like the distorted sound and like the fake, you know, film distortion that they put on there, but this video doesn't even really disguise the awfulness of like of what's happening either. All they do is just not show the show the killing floor.
That's true, because I'm pretty sure if they actually showed the killing floor, it got like a TVMA rating or something.
Yeah, not really a floor. It's more like a grating that things could sluice through.
Yeah, that just...
And the food chain chart with just a person in the middle and all the arrows from every animal pointing at the person.
Yeah, that's how the food chain works. People eat everything.
That is the food chain. And, of course, they neglect to mention, like, there's a lot of animals that just eat plants. They don't...
Yeah.
There are animals that just eat plants. Like I don't know, rabbits?
Rabbits that's
just,
true.
Rabbits eat plants. Turtles?
Yeah. They really do. Well, lots of animals. I believe they're called herbivores.
Oh, Matt with the science! Whoa!
That's true, especially the rumitants who mostly eat grass.
Not even
the more complex plants.
The whole video is just wonderful. It's just, and the tripe is okay. I'm not gonna say that it's impossible to make tripe taste good, because I've had Chinese food that has tripe in it and it's tasted fine.
Probably because they like hid the taste of tripe.
I mean, one, you cook it a lot at a very low temperature and you put a yummy sauce on it. What it looked like was boiled tripe just piled on a plate. Gross.
Yeah, it's just sorry. We'll shut up about tripe now, but seriously, don't have any. Don't try it. It's just awful. But of course, Lisa is upset at all this. We then cut to Homer's barbecue, which is a huge success. There's a ton of people. They even brought picnic tables into the backyard for this. Dr. Hibbert is there. He gets a hot beef injection from Homer, which is not nearly as terrible as it sounds. It's just a hot dog.
Yeah, worry. Exactly.
We get to see Homer's lighter fluid gag, which is great. It's mostly visual, so you can't really
But it's a callback to, I forget which Treehouse of Horror it is. There's a Treehouse of Horror where...
One.
It was the first one? Okay, first. Yeah. He just puts an entire lighter fluid box in the grill and it goes... Poof. And this one he does two full lighter fluid bottles and just a nice little simmering flame.
Which is accurate to real life.
Yeah, it's not cumulative. It doesn't matter.
No. It's one thing. Charcoal probably tastes better. I guess it almost definitely tastes better, but gas is too easy to ignore. But, you know, moving on. Lisa, of course, comes out at that point and says, oh, you don't have to eat meat. I've made gazpacho. To which everyone laughs, rightfully, because there are a lot of great vegetarian foods out there. I mean, I will eat falafels up and down all day because they are fantastic. Gazpacho is nasty. For those of you who don't know, gazpacho is cold tomato soup. It is awful.
Cold tomato. I mean, I don't like V8. I don't like,
I don't like hot tomato soup.
I like hot tomato soup when there's grilled cheese involved.
Yeah, even then, I'd rather just have the grilled cheese and some other kind of soup.
But at a barbecue, basically all the sides probably are vegetarian already.
Right? Like, you could show up to a barbecue, you could have potato salad, you could have chips, you could have french fries,
There's corn, there's a corn, like various salads, there's... Here's
the
corn
all,
on...
All the vegetables you can put on the grill to make them taste amazing.
I think we see Lisa get kind of ashamed when they laugh at her. You know, she runs up back to her room and leaves the gazpacho to be licked up by Santa's little helper.
Yeah, because no one else will eat it.
But I think I feel like Lisa's being driven to this explosion of anger which we see.
That's true, because I think that's kind of the whole point of this episode, is that Lisa is pushing and pushing and pushing other people to accept her beliefs, and surprise, that doesn't work. It's just like, if it's one of those things that I think this episode is trying to teach, is if you give people the alternative and, you know, just kind of show them why, because people are interested in new things, they'll try it out and you'll get some of them to agree with you. And eventually we're going to have lab grown meat. We have some right now. Apparently it tastes pretty good. It's just, you know, $10,000 a pound.
Only?
It's not quite there yet.
Only 10,000?
It's down to $10,000 a pound, last I saw.
Oh, good, good. That's good. We're getting
eventually
there.
We will all be eating that, and we won't have to eat animals, although I'm sure there'll be some purists who enjoy animal suffering. But, you know, as soon as the lab-grown meat is the same price, easy choice right there for me. Anyway, we'll go back to the actual story.
A nice little insight into Matt's psyche there, guys. As soon as we have affordable lab-grown meat, straight to it.
Think of all the resources we'll save with lab-grown meat.
No, we don't have to talk. I fully understand that we're destroying the earth with our farming, but
especially cows. Cows are the devil.
I mean, they fart.
Among the many reasons that they're bad for the environment.
They fart a lot.
But poor Lisa, after being mocked for her gazpacho tendencies, goes up to her room to stew with the window open. Why the window is open, I couldn't tell you. Maybe there are parts of the country where it's nice enough outside in the summertime to open up your window.
I live in one now, Matt.
I figured. And then somehow I forget exactly how. I think Homer is flipping a burger and it ends up on Lisa's face.
Chief Wiggum seems to be having like health problems, legitimate, like can't move.
Oh, that's right, he can't move under his own power anymore, but he wants another burger.
So Homer flips one at him, but then Bart walks by. He's gonna flip one at Bart, but he miscalculates.
Yes, because Homer is not good at throwing things, apparently.
Well, he got that one to Wiggum perfectly.
Yeah, which maybe somebody hit the back of his knee. That happens all the time in sports, right? You take an arrow to the knee and just go down.
Arrow? What sports are we talking about, Matt?
Archery, obviously.
Archery is not it's not a combative sport. You're aiming at a target.
Well, that sounds way less fun than I was thinking. But Lisa, of course, takes the burger to the face as intentional, because that's the way humans are. We assume intent behind other people's actions. And, of course, this upsets her. We then see Homer rolling out his entire pig for the piece de resistance of the barbecue. Of course, Wiggum makes fun of its nose, because it's exactly Chief Wiggum's nose. It's looking to a mirror, essentially, for him. But Lisa, at this point, is enraged and drives the family's riding lawnmower into the pig and then into the river. And from there, well, I'll just let you guys listen.
Congratulations, Homer. Your cue is a huge success. Hey, a toast to the host who can boast the most roast.
Thanks, Flanders. I have to agree that everything certainly...
Huh? Bart, no!
What?
Sorry, force of habit. Lisa! No!
It's just a little dirty. It's still good. It's still good. It's just a little slimy. It's still good. It's still good. It's just a little airborne. It's still good. It's still good.
It's good.
I know.
You know, Smithers, I think I'll donate $1 million to the local orphanage. When pigs fly.
That's a good one. Hey, will you be donating that $1 million now, sir?
No, I'd still prefer not.
Sorry, I just had to throw that in at the end because I really love Mr. Burns' line. I think I'd rather not.
No, I'm still not going to. That it's still good. It's still good thing is one of my favorite things from The Simpsons. One of the things I always quote when there's a disaster, when something terrible happens to something I own, and I'm like, it's still good, it's still good. I drop an ice cream on the ground. It's still good, it's still good. It's gone.
It's gone, I know.
I know.
It's beautiful. It's so great. But that actually ends our second act.
Yeah, and we've seen this explosion of rage from Lisa. It's built up to a boiling point, and she just couldn't handle it anymore. She just didn't know what to do. Like, she got a burger in the face, and I don't know, it just tipped her over. Homer, the act three begins immediately with Homer demanding an apology from Lisa. She has ruined his, one, she's ruined his barbecue. Everyone has already eaten. Like, what, you have an entire pig? What are they gonna, they're going to eat that now?
Chief already can't walk on his own. I don't think you need to
just put
keep
the,
going.
You put the pig out first, and then you have the assorted meats around it. That's what I, that's like.
Right.
And
for people who aren't big on cutting off directly off the pig, you have the burgers nearby.
As someone who has done that, it's awesome. You should definitely, if you have the chance to eat like a, just off the whole, like a part, the animal that's, it's, I don't know. I'm not as squeamish about it, but I know some people are very.
That's
squeamish.
True. I don't know. I kind of feel like if you can't cut a piece off of an animal and eat it, it being cooked, you probably shouldn't be eating meat.
I think that also speaks to the, you know, the, a lot of people, you don't necessarily think like, yo, this part of the, this came off a part of an animal, you know? I thoroughly enjoyed the experience of doing that. But he demands an apology. Lisa refuses. She's just as angry as Homer is. You know, they're both, and this has kind of grown to this point where Homer and Lisa are like diametrically opposed about this, and neither of them refuse to budge. And, you know, Homer tells Lisa to go to her room after she's already saying she's going to her room. We see the family at breakfast, I assume the next day, and it is tense at the table.
Marge, since I'm not talking to Lisa, would you please ask her to pass me the syrup?
Please pass your father the syrup, Lisa.
Bart, tell Dad I'll only pass the syrup if it won't be used on any meat product.
You dunking your sausages in that syrup, homeboy?
Marge, tell Bart I just want to drink a nice glass of syrup like I do every morning.
Tell him yourself. You're ignoring Lisa, not Bart.
Bart, thank your mother for pointing that out.
Homer, you're not talking to me. And secondly, I heard what you said.
Lisa, tell your mother to get off my case.
Dad, Lisa's the one you're not talking to.
Bart, go to your room!
Why don't you just eat him, Dad?
I don't need any serving suggestions from you, you barbecue-wrecking know-nothing know-it-all!
That's it! I can't live in a house with this prehistoric carnivore! I am out of here!
So Lisa has run away. I don't know where she's gonna live now. It's not necessarily.
Kids rarely think these things through.
Yeah, exactly. She is 8 years old. And, you know, it is the very much like, I'm just so angry. I don't know how to process this. I'm running away. I'm leaving. I can't take this. She leaves and, runs into some children. Was it Ralph, Janie, and Sherry and Terry, who all make fun of her and ask her if she's going to marry a carrot. And Lisa says, yes, I'm going to marry a carrot.
Very sarcastically, and then kids are bad at sarcasm.
All the kids are like, oh my, she said it, she's gonna... I like that. Just, it's a very small moment in this episode. I really appreciate it, because it is very kind of realistic. Like, oh no, she actually said the thing that we are making fun of her. But this whole segment, and The Simpsons do this really well. They've done this in multiple past episodes, where someone is trying to cope with some kind of cultural issue. Most famously I can think of is Duffless, where Homer is trying to not drink, and he goes on, this is very similar to that, in that she's going through town, and everything she sees is about eating meat. It, you know, there, she, every restaurant she passes, she passes a billboard and says, don't eat beef, eat deer.
Which, to be fair, is good advice. Deer are better for the environment, they're better for you, but if you're a vegetarian, it probably seems similar.
It doesn't, yeah, it's still an animal. And Lisa finds herself at the Quickie Mart, where they are advertising all beef dogs, and she just breaks. She's just like, fine. If she feels like the universe is telling her, eat meat, don't think about it, just do it. You can't do it in this society. You have to be able to eat meat. And she kind of just, her resolve fractures. She goes in, just grabs a hot dog off the little rollers in the Quickie Mart and takes a bite and then yells. And then a Pooh shows up and says, ask her if she enjoys the tofu dogs, which he has replaced and no one's noticed.
It's true, because when you think about a gas station hot dog, you're not thinking, quality. You're thinking, this probably won't kill me.
I need calories.
Yeah.
I need fuel. I don't care what it is. I mean, they even did the hot dog thing with Lisa's vision earlier, where it's like a shoe, a pigeon, a raccoon. So, tofu dog is ostensibly healthier, even though Pooh says it's three times the fat. Tofu isn't fattier by, I mean, the flavorance maybe would be fat,
Yeah, I don't think – I think tofu is actually pretty decent in terms of macronutrient balance compared to meat. It's just the flavor and texture generally are pretty awful unless it's put through some pretty serious processing.
Yeah, you have to either, like, fry your tofu or, like, you know, cook it up with a special – like, sauce it, you know, have additional flavors to your – it's raw protein, basically. Like, it is
right.
a protein replacement if you're not eating, you know, even, you know, meats. Lisa is kind of shocked. She's a little surprised. She's like, really, tofu? And Apu's like, and if you think about it, of course Apu is a vegetarian. You know, he's Hindu.
That's right.
You know, they, you know, they're, it's the kind of the thing. It's like, no, we don't, you know, the cows are allowed to walk wherever they want. Because
that's why Indian food is generally very, very good. Because it's mostly, vegetarian and very spicy.
Well, it depends which order. They're pretty. Every Indian restaurant I've ever gone to is very open about this is spicy. This is not spicy. Yeah. How much spice do you want?
This will kill you.
Yeah, you probably can't handle this. But Apu takes her up to a rooftop garden on top of the Quickie Mart through the faux freezer display for the non-alcoholic beer, which no one has ever discovered because apparently no one ever wants non-alcoholic beer, which. Parents of my friends, when I was a kid, they drank non-alcoholic beer,
I guess.
Well, one non-alcoholic beer has alcohol in it, just a very low amount, but I don't understand because it.
Well, I feel like for a lot of people, non-alcoholic beer is, hey, I used to drink a lot of beer with my friends. I'm trying to stay away from the alcohol now, but this makes me feel like I can be part of the gang.
But they were just. Drinking alone at home.
Habit, maybe?
I don't know.
It's kind of like why people who smoke chew gum kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I don't know the history of that particular parent when I was like 12 or whatever. But they go up to this rooftop garden, and Pooh is, you know, he's like, this is where I go where I need to kind of get away from things. Get away from society and how they, you know, the norms that I feel pressure from occasionally. And, you know, I think everybody has their sanctuary. I think that is part of the reason that Lisa kind of breaks earlier is because she goes up to her room, which is ostensibly her sanctuary.
And is, you know, attacked essentially.
They throw me into it. And I feel like that is, I don't know if that's intentional or not, but I feel like it is a part of the reason. Like she is not safe anywhere in that house and why she leaves. But she goes, and then she's talking to Apu, and Paul and Linda McCartney show up.
Paul and Linda McCartney.
Sorry. Paul and Linda McCartney just show up and say hi.
Well, Apu is friends with them. They met him in India, and now they come and hang out in his garden.
I mean, that is – I like that they did that little bit I don't know. It's a very tenuous connection, but they did spend time in India. It makes, like, you can, like, yeah, they met him then. Like, that's a good way they could be friends with him. Paul and Linda McCartney were famously vegetarian. I did not pull this whole clip because they actually talk for a pretty good, decent amount of time. And it is, I don't know, I did not even think about this at the time, but this does feel a little bit commercial. Where they're like, yeah, we actually sell vegetarian food.
Oh, so they actually do?
I thought they did.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just assumed that was a joke, but maybe you're right. Maybe they actually do.
Yeah, there's Linda McCartney Foods.
Hmm.
Is it celebrating 25 years? So I don't know. Like that felt vaguely like, hey, we agreed to be on the show, but we also get to say, hey, we have food that you can buy. So I was like, it felt made me feel a little weird, but they do have a really kind of funny part after that.
Linda and I both feel strongly about animal rights. In fact, if you play Maybe I'm Amazed backwards, you'll hear a recipe for a really ripping lentil soup.
When will all those fools learn that you can be perfectly healthy simply eating vegetables, fruits, grains, and cheese?
Oh, cheese!
You don't eat cheese, Apu?
No, I don't eat any food that comes from an animal.
Oh, then you must think I'm a monster.
Yes, indeed, I do think that, but I learned long ago, Lisa, to tolerate others rather than forcing my beliefs on them. You know, you can influence people without badgering them always. It's like Paul's song, Live and Let Live.
Actually, it was Live and Let Die.
Whatever. It had a good rhythm.
I guess I have been pretty hard on a lot of people, especially my dad.
Thanks, you guys.
I think that, like, we learned that Apu is more than just vegetarian. He's vegan. And that's the, when you're talking about CrossFit earlier, I was going to be like, doesn't go full vegan, vegan CrossFit.
See, I was gonna say that, but I was like, well, we go vegans, you know, later in the episode. Not to mention, I feel like it's worse for CrossFit people than vegan people.
No, I have had the opposite experience. Oh, I don't, okay. I've never been preached like you need to do CrossFit. There have been vegan people or like, you need to be, like, not, they're Lisa in this episode. Yeah. And I think what Lisa learns is what Apu says is like, you're more likely to convert someone through example, you know, through the way you live, through the way you act, without badgering, without being a nag about it. You're more likely to change a person's mind. If they
you want to know the best way to change someone's mind, be a good example.
Yeah. Lead by example. Best way you can do it. And Lisa is learning that. There's one thing I wanted to mention that I didn't include in the clip was when Paul walks up. Lisa says, "I read about you in history class." Which, I mean, this is
I did too
in '95. Yeah, so even then, even at that point, you know, Paul McCartney wasn't certainly topical. Lisa leaves the garden and is going. I assume going back to the house, but on the way she encounters Homer, who's looking for her. And Homer is also like he's looking. Looking for her by like shouting down into the sewers and into a baby's carriage.
Yeah,
that poor not really baby.
Sure what's going on?
I know it's Homer. But they find each other.
Oh, Lisa, I was looking for you. I wanted to apologize. I don't know exactly what went wrong, but I know it's always my fault.
Actually, Dad, this time I was wrong too.
Huh.
While I was gone, I got some really good advice from Paul and Linda McCartney.
Rock stars. Is there anything they don't know?
I still stand by my beliefs, but I can't defend what I did. I'm sorry I messed up your barbecue.
I understand, honey. I used to believe in things when I was a kid. Come on. I'll give you a piggyback ride. A veggie back ride home.
There's so much there. One, Lisa's apology. I really like this episode because it is truly, I feel it is like a very fair look at someone converting to vegetarianism, but also learning the fact that they can't, like, don't be rude to other people just because of your, like, you can think all the things you want, just don't say them. And I think, like, Homer, I also like at the end here that Homer is also apologetic, even though it's not, he didn't really do anything wrong. He was acting completely in line with societal norms. Like, he's not like having a barbecue is like a crazy, deplorable offense, but he still is because he knows Lisa, he knows how smart she is, and he doesn't completely understand her point of view.
That's true. He's basically assumed that it's almost always his fault, essentially. And he's just accepted that, and he's like, well, I guess I was wrong. I don't know why Lisa says two. She should realize at this point that she is also she is wrong. Homer didn't really do anything wrong, which is weird for The Simpsons. I know. It's unusual, but I feel like even Lisa, she could be a big enough person to admit that she was wrong.
I understand her when she says two because they did tease her quite a bit. And that is if you want her not to be preachy, then you can't tease them. You have to respect their beliefs. You have to respect their decisions, and just let it be. Bringing up another Beatles song.
I was saying, was that intentional, Robbie?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yep. The credits roll over "Maybe I'm Amazed," which is a slightly altered version of "Maybe I'm Amazed," which includes a lentil soup recipe that they recorded Paul speaking. Paul's, I guess they played it backwards. I guess I don't think they recorded Paul speaking backwards, but
no, that'd be really hard.
I have the recipe right here, Matt. It is 1 medium onion chopped, 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, 1 clove of garlic crushed, 1 cup of carrots chopped, 2 sticks of celery chopped, 1/2 cup of lentils, 1 bay leaf, 1 tablespoon of freshly chopped parsley, salt, and freshly ground pepper to taste, and of course 2 1/4 cups of vegetable stock. And also, Paul does also say, "I'm alive."
Yeah.
which is a
hey guys,
a reference to there was a period of time when people thought Paul McCartney was dead. Which,
well, because they listened to one of his songs backwards and it said, oh, Paul is dead, obviously.
Well, and of course, that is the complete and utter truth. Of course,
it's true. That wasn't Paul McCartney. That was actually Hank Azaria doing Paul McCartney's voice. Obviously, Robbie, come on.
If it was Hank Azaria, he did a really good job.
I know, right?
I don't know. It's a good episode. It's really, really funny on top of, like, really, like, tackling these characters. Like, and this stuck. Lisa is still a vegetarian.
That's true. It's one of those things that didn't get reset at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I believe. And I think that was actually, at least from what I've read, is that that was one of Paul McCartney's conditions upon him doing this, is that Lisa has to stay a vegetarian.
So good on you, Simpsons writers, for keeping that alive.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it does. They've had multiple episodes after that, kind of exploring it. Like, there's an episode where, you know, the whole vegetarianism versus vegan thing, and like the bugs, and there's, you know, they spun off of it in multiple different ways. I don't know. It's a really good Lisa episode.
It really is. It's a really good Simpsons episode in general. Like I said, we're always striving for balance between the ones that have a message and a lot of heart, which this one does, and have a lot of jokes. And the only thing I could say that this might not have is a dedicated homage to some sort of, you know, you know, no allusions to some movie or book or something like that, which we always enjoy. I mean, it's even got Troy McClure in it. I mean, Phil Hartman doing a great job. It's going to be tough to rank this one.
It is. We will rank it at the end of the show. We have some submissions for my favorite episode, Matthew.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not either. Let's see. First from Josh. It's hard to pick for me between this episode or Homer's Barbershop Quartet. I guess when they have a member of the Beatles on, I can't resist. This one ultimately wins out. I love Lisa the Vegetarian because, first and foremost, I love comedies. I'm a big fan of some great jokes, and this episode is full of them. From the amusement park that's only fun until you're 7 and a half, to the independent thought alarm, to Phil Hartman's brilliant performance in this episode. Really appreciate this episode and really enjoy y'all's podcast. Keep up the excellent work, and I remember, you don't win friends with salad.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is from Nick. Buenos ding dong diddly dias, senors. I enjoy the podcast. Appreciate the work you fellas do. After much deep contemplation, I've decided my favorite episode has got to be Lisa the Vegetarian. This episode is a near perfect balance of silliness and sincerity. The storyline focuses mainly on the core family and the impact when Lisa makes a conscious lifestyle change based on a question of personal morality. Plus, the great guest stars in the episode, Phil Hartman, Paul, Linda McCartney, complement that storyline. This is exploring a topic that is very relatable, even still today, also has a plethora of his hilarious gags and very memorable quotes. What a load of crappy crap. He blows, all right. He blows big time. Come on, eat the can. Come on, eat the can. Out of the way, you. You might say the secret ingredient is salt. That was a good one we missed. Sensible bites. Oh boy, sleep. That's where I'm a Viking. Yum, it's rich in bundling goodness. If a cow ever got the chance, he'd eat you and everyone you care about. Just a little slimy. It's still good. Hey, Goober. Where's the meat? And the Simpsons quote I've used the most throughout my lifetime, you don't win friends with salad, plus a whole lot more. Episode taught me about the food chain, what hot dogs made of, inspired me to dunk my sausages in syrup, hopefully one day graduate from Bovine University. It's the only episode in which a guest star's ultimatum caused a permanent but believable change to a character. As all lifelong Simpsons fans I know, it can be impossible to really narrow down a choice to one favorite episode, but to me, Lisa the Vegetarian has always stood up my memory. Thank you, guys. Catch you at the next Simpsons show, pod, BBBQ.
Yeah.
If that was in any way achievable, that'd be a great thing to do, but I don't think it's possible. Finally, from Jeremy. See, this Lisa episode may not hit emotionally as hard as Lisa's Substitute or Lisa on Ice, but it has a sweet ending followed by one of the funniest television episodes of all time. I love the chalk forged by Lucifer, the pig flying, and the epic slideshow that is my favorite Troy McClure bit. And the moral of the episode isn't so bad either. Don't force your beliefs on others. Thanks again, guys. So, thank you for your submissions. If you have a submission for my favorite episode, simply send it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, and I'll read it when we get to that episode. Next up, Matt. It is time, once again, for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments from the news group is where I will comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group and see what people are talking about the week or two after the episode debuted. It is archived on Google Groups. Unfortunately, Google, I don't know, lost. This, we're still in the Twilight Zone, in the black hole. I don't know what happened to that stuff. Probably corrupted somehow. I still got reviews from Simpsons Archive, along with that recipe, by the way. The recipe was on Simpsons. They figured that out back in when this episode aired.
Hey, they had audio tape back then.
I guess that's true. You could do a manual, like, all that stuff. I'm sure there's people with that equipment. I don't know. The reviews were up and down. None like, super angry about it, though. But mostly, like, there's some loved it. Some were, like, even back, I think people were saying it was their favorite yet. But there was also some, like, it's a C.
Weird people, man.
I don't know. It's so funny. I don't know how they, like, even if you don't care about the message, like, I feel like some people are put off by anything that has any kind of message.
Yeah, like, I want to laugh. I don't want any messages in my stuff.
I know, but it's ultimately the, like, that's what this episode is. Why I like this episode is because it ultimately is saying, like, don't do that. Don't be super preachy about everything. Just live your life the way you want to and try and influence others that way. Whatever. That's all. I mean, that's all there is. Again, I want the weirdness. I want weird random news group postings again. I'll take it with the anger. I miss it. I always enjoy it, looking back through the weirdness. But, oh well. I think it comes back.
Feels random stories of, hey, by the way, I was in this town when this happened.
Yeah, exactly. I like that stuff. But I think it's like up through a couple more episodes, and then it might, I don't know. I saw, when I was looking far ahead, I saw something, so I know it doesn't vanish forever. But we can move on to our next segment. It's time for the listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
The listener question of the week this week is, what is the most underrated episode? Which I left it, people took this in various ways, but I like it when things are a little bit more open-ended. Tons and tons of great answers. I really, you guys did a great job. Keep it up. First from Abby, Skinner's Sense of Snow. I think that because this episode is outside of the classic era, season 12, and it suffered from horrible edits in the syndicated version, doesn't get enough credit for how funny it is. They took a great premise, kids get locked in the school with Skinner and take it over, and totally nailed it. This episode easily in my top 10. I wish I heard more good stuff about it. I don't know. Well, we haven't got to it yet, but I have general positive feelings about Skinner's Sense of Snow. But I feel like, I think a lot of people took this as like the general Simpsons public. Which a lot of people, like, they didn't even bother watch after, like, season 10.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, after, they just stopped. They fell off. Mike's answer, I'll go a little controversial here and say Principal and the Pauper. Maybe the general consensus moment of when the show jumped the shark, but there are a lot of funny moments there and have been some later episodes that break the canon much more. Chris, I'm going to go with Das Bus. Or I want to say Das Bus.
Man, really, Chris? That's bold right there.
I like Das Bus.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I like Das Bus. There are a lot of great quotable lines to go overlook. Plus, I have to love it since it parodies Lord of the Flies. I think they revoke your BA in English if you don't. Which, maybe that's why I like it. Now that you mention it. Elliot, I'm just going off the best ever episode ever rankings. Oh, Brother Warth, that was probably my favorite season 2 episode. My favorite thing about The Simpsons is the world the writers have created. They introduce Unky Herb, who's one of my favorite characters, and the episode gets adventurous with the family visiting their enterprising uncle/brother. Perfectly introduces an in-shape Homer with more hair. Episode also furthers Homer's reputation as a dunce who can ruin anything. I mean, yes, the Homer is... I want to drive it, Homer.
Yes, definitely.
Nick's answer, Sex Pies and Idiot Scrapes, season 20. Solid season as far as the newer seasons go. Newer meaning within the last 10 seasons. Has a good Homer and Ned buddy cop B-plot. In my opinion, the best couch gag, Boba Fett freezes the family in carbonite. Gretchen, I don't know if it's the most underrated. There are just too many episodes and tons I haven't even seen for me to form a definitive opinion on that. But a favorite of mine that often gets overlooked is Bart Gets Enough, season 2, so it doesn't look great. Just punches me in the feels every time. Holly's answer, I want to say all of season 23. I feel season 10 starts good. It seems they aren't trying again until season 23. I recommend it highly. The Food Wife, Bart Stops to Smell the Roosevelts, Politically Inept with Homer Simpson. Seriously, go watch. And yes, season 23 is pretty good. Isaac, at Isaac is good. And Chief of Hearts from the 21st season, Homer and Wiggum as best friends. It's just so sweet. Hugh, at Hugh Harley, by far The Food Wife, one of the best modern episodes of comedy, and the story fizzled together into a lovely milkshake. I like that little metaphor.
Yay, milkshake.
Lods? At Lods, TBB? Simpson tie, top homer moment, so many jokes. B plot coincides with the A plot. Underrated because it's the season 9 ep. Starbucks gag holds up. It's my first day. You're like the father I never visit. That is so 1991 from Ralph, etc. Brian, my submission for underrated episode is New Kids on the Blech, which we got multiple for New Kids on the Blech. Although I've seen this episode cited as the beginning of the show's decline, truly think this is a great Simpsons episode that ranks high in the Simpsons canon. Finally, John, based on your list, the most underrated episode, in my opinion, is Radio Bart, which has plummeted all the way down to number 83, soon to be 97. Great story, great music, great insight into the townsfolk. I'll be sending my love down the well for this episode and for Timmy O'Toole. Matt, what is your answer?
Oh, there's quite a few. I think I'm actually going to go with She Used to Be My Girl, which is from season 16. And Marge is feeling less accomplished when her friend from high school, who was played by Kim Cattrall, comes back and is a, you know, a big time reporter. And it's got some funny gags, but it's really great in that Lisa sees that essentially Marge is still a very competent, wonderful person, even though she didn't, you know, leave Springfield and become big and famous. She is extremely competent at what she does. And I think it's a really great Marge Lisa episode, which there aren't a whole lot of.
I was thinking about this. Like, I was like, it's hard. Like, I think you could pick anything, a lot of episodes from basically after season 9 or 10 and forwards. And, like, they just haven't been seen as much. You know, everyone has seen all the classic years multiple times. And then you look at a lot of the, like, there's a lot of really good episodes in the more modern seasons. They're still there. I think
that, especially a season like 20 on, get actually really good. There are some episodes in there that I feel like are more known, but, you know, are still pretty good.
And I, you know, you could pick a lot of those, but I feel like in general, they are, I mean, I think fairly, like, they're just not as well known, but I don't know if they're underrated. They're just not as seen. I don't know. I'm going to go with Principal and the Pauper. Like, I was trying to think of episodes that get a lot of hate, and that is the number one episode I see, you know, and that's still in season 9, which is still considered basically one of the golden years to a large extent. I don't know. It is a crazy episode where we learn that a character's backstory is entirely different. Like, he is a totally different person. But
yeah, I think the reason people hate it so much is that it really, you know, pushes off from the canon. It's like, oh, all these things you've learned, they're all wrong.
But I really like that. I think it's a very, like, it's a, like, I wish they did. Like, that is, I think, the biggest problem with 10, 11, 12, and 13 even. Like, those early teen seasons, which are, I would say, are the worst seasons. They have certainly the largest collection of bad episodes in them. They played it very safe in a lot of ways and kind of went away. Like, The Simpsons have always been a show that pushes things to the edge. Like, they always do weird things. And up through this 7, 8, 9, they got even weirder. Stranger Things, they took crazier chances with stuff. As television was beginning to adjust to them to a certain extent. It started off as like a very much like, hey, it's a twist on a normal sitcom. Instead, it's much smarter writing. And because it's animation, they can do all kinds of crazy things. And as they went further along, they went further and further out. And I think Principal and the Pauper is just a natural extension of that. It's, you know, it's an experiment that I think is really fun and really, it's a funny episode. And I do not care one bit that I think it's even funnier that at the end of the episode, they're like, no, it didn't happen. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. It's really good because it allows them to experiment with things like that. And then at the end of the episode say, no, we're going back to the original, but this will be one of those funny things that people know.
I like it in that case and a few other instances where they do that. Like, no, this is all actually, we're going to just pretend it didn't happen. But yeah. You can only do that so many times. So that's why, like, they've tried to do it after, and a couple times it works, but then you can't do that too many times. It's that gimmick only works occasionally because it's boy who cries wolf kind of thing, where you're like, oh, you're just relying on this to do, like, those comic book covers from the 50s where Batman and Superman suddenly are mortal enemies.
Yeah.
And then, oh, it was all a dream! But again, thank you guys for your answers. Question for next week is
from a suggestion by frequent contributor at YT2Dope.
What Simpsons quote do you use most in day-to-day life?
Ooh, that's rough. Ooh, I'll start taking notes.
You just, yeah, I'm going to try and, like, keep a pace of, like, oh, what did I do, like, this week every time I think of a Simpsons reference? But I will post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Any of those places, you can follow, like, whatever the word is for that particular social media platform is. Next up, Matt, it is time, once again, for the No Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge is where Matt and I will each try and challenge each other with three trivia questions. One easy, one medium, and one hard. Try and stump the other. We have had wagers for the past two seasons, Season 5 and Season 6. I've lost both. You can also find those videos on our YouTube channel. We have decided on the stakes for this season. We've gotten some good suggestions. I just didn't know how ways to actually achieve them. We did get a suggestion from Rob to do a chalkboard gag punishment, which I think is a great idea. We just don't have
access. And we would love to do it.
Yeah, but we don't have access to a giant chalkboard. And actually, most classrooms, I think, Matt, you said that have moved over into
most are whiteboards now. I don't know of any classroom that still has an old school chalkboard. And Robbie has decided that whiteboards are not good enough.
No, we have to, if we're going to do that, we have to do it right. And that includes the chalkboard. And giant chalkboards cost like hundreds of dollars, which, you know, that's a lot of money just for a wager. So we're going to hit the old awful food well again. And the loser of this season has to eat 64 slices of American cheese.
Yay.
Individually sliced and wrapped slices of American cheese.
And the really garbagey American cheese.
Well, you know, none of the I would say Kraft.
Yeah, as I said, the garbagey kind.
Oh, I think Kraft is... There's worse than Kraft, Matt.
Okay, you're probably right. There is definitely worse than Kraft, but there's also a lot better than Kraft.
That's... Well, of course. Of course there's better. There's always better. But that will be the wager for this season. I hope I don't lose again.
So the questions are going to get a lot harder from here on out.
I'll start us off this week with an easy question. These are all from one particular episode, Matt. These are all from Make Room for Lisa,
Okay. Which
I wrote about for Patreon this past week. In Make Room for Lisa, Homer goes into debt to what cell phone company?
Oh, it's a really weird name. OmniTouch.
Whew. That is correct.
All right. All right. Mine are actually pretty easy this week, despite what I said. So, all right. What two educators became a couple in Grade School Confidential?
That would be Skinner and Krabappel.
Indeed.
Your medium question, Matt.
Okay.
What in Make Room for Lisa, what does Homer damage that puts him into debt?
It is... It's a very important document. I want to say it's... Crap. The Bill of Rights?
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
You are correct.
Oh, I was afraid it was the Constitution, which I submit should be a valid answer either way, since it's part of the Bill of Rights.
Is exclusively the Bill of Rights. They don't mention anything about the Constitution.
Fine.
You got it right. What does it matter?
It matters. Anyway, in Grade School Confidential, what food sickens Martin's party guests, and why does Bart not get sick?
Okay, it is some sort of... It's like a either like an oyster or a mussel or one. It's like a clams. I'm going to go with oyster.
Okay, and the second part?
I mean, he doesn't eat it.
But it's very funny what he does with it. That's what I'm going with here.
Oh, he gave it... Didn't he give it to the cat or something? Or
indeed he did!
Yeah.
Sorry, I think it's funny. Giving oysters to a cat is really weird to me.
I mean, I think Smokey would eat oysters if I gave them to her.
I would imagine so.
She eats broccoli, so I think she would eat oysters.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Your hard question.
Mm.
What happens to Homer's sensory deprivation chamber while he is inside of it? I'm looking for, I want to order events, 1, 2, 3, 4, Jesus. Roughly 5 to 6 things, depending on how you kind of describe them. But I will give you, I'll give you, there's a little bit of bend to this. I want you to just tell me what happens to it.
Okay. So they come to repossess it, and they just take the one for some reason. They only take Homer's. I can't exactly remember why they only take his. I think because the one guy said, I remember the joke is that, oh, my back really hurts. You should lift with your legs. And the guy says, oh, I got health insurance. He then falls out of the back of the repo vehicle. He slides down to the beach. And I want to say somebody comes along and buries him. And then, oh, and then something, he somehow he gets into the sewers and it goes back to the beach. And then somebody brings him back and he's at the end of the episode, he is at the end of the journey, he is back next to Lisa and he wakes up thinking it was all part of the sensory deprivation. And Lisa has had her own spiritual journey and Homer has had a real journey. That's about all I got.
You want to identify, try and identify both who buried him and who brought him back.
Oh God. Who buried him? I'm going to say Flanders buried him. Okay. For no particular reason. And who brought him back? I'm going to say it was, who would bring him back? Let's say, Skinner.
Is that right? Chief Wiggum.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you.
I was actually just watching season, what was that, 11, 12, something like that?
I think 11. I'm not entirely positive, but I believe it's 11. I'm going to give you 2 out of 3 points for that one, Matt. If you had gotten Wiggum, I would have given you full points, but he is repossessed. They don't have room for Lisa's. That's the only reason they leave
Lisa's. Oh, of course. They don't have room. That's why.
But it falls off the back of the truck. It goes down a cliff.
Down the cliff.
Flanders finds it. I believe either Rod or Todd calls it an angel egg or something, something like that. And they bury it, but it falls through the ground into the sewer, which then washes out to sea. It washes onto the beach in which Chief Wiggum finds it and returns it back to the New Age place. Hmm. Episode does not hold up.
It does not. It's actually.
It's not. Okay. What is my hard question, Matthew?
All right, your hard question. I don't think it's that hard, because you remember you got the second question pretty easily. Who was the entertainer at Martin's party, and what was his trick?
I have a guess, but I don't. I'm not sure if I'm mixing it up with a different episode. Is it the math magician?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Okay,
until you tell
I'm gonna say
what
it's,
he did.
I'm gonna say it's the math magician, and his trick was some lame thing. that involves math. Okay. I'm gonna say it is. Is it like? I'm wondering how high level math trick they try and do. Because I want to go for like it's long division or something dumb like that, or like, you know, something relatively simple. But it could also be like something about an imaginary number or something like that. I'm just gonna say long division. I don't know. I can't remember.
I think I can also give you partial credit, probably the same 2 out of 3 points, because it is long division, but his trick is making the remainder disappear.
Oh, my Lord. Like I said, something lame.
Yep, something lame, super lame, but, you know, that's it.
Making the math, yeah. Oh, making the remainder disappear.
Sounds like that's what a math magician does,
that's
Robbie.
That's a joke you would make.
It is. It really is.
You and the... Not even, not like it's a, that's not even a dad joke. That's like a math dad joke.
Exactly. It's like I majored in math. Who would major in math? Kind of crazy person.
My wife did as well.
That was the joke.
I know. She's much smarter than me. We can move on to our final segment. Well, let me say, okay. I am leading 15-9. We both got 5 points there. So 15-9. We got 20 episodes to go, give or take a couple. I just gotta keep carrying on. Just keep going. I can do this. Matt just has to keep watching old episodes, new episodes, just have to constantly bombard myself with Simpsons information, and I can maybe stand a chance. We can move on to our final segment. Segment we end every single episode with. It is time for best episode ever.
Best episode ever.
Best episode ever is the part of the show, man. I will rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. This is a tricky one, Matt.
It really is, because like we've been talking about, this is a really meaty episode in terms of emotional content. It's got a great message, but like you said, people forget about how funny it is. So it's really, not to mention Phil Hartman. can never forget about Phil Hartman. So it's got really everything we love in a Simpsons episode, but it's not really screaming like number one or number two for me, like Bart Sells His Soul was.
No,
I'm definitely thinking high, like probably top 20.
Yeah, I would say top 20. I feel like that is a place to start. I'm just looking at this list, and there's just not a lot of episodes that you can compare this to.
No, what's the one you compared it to earlier?
Oh, Duffless. But I think it's way Duffless. Funnier than Duffless.
Oh, yeah, way funnier.
Because it is not about alcoholism, which
right.
is not an hilarious topic generally. But, you know, it is more about, you know, vegetarianism, which generally a little bit softer. Going vegetarian does not ruin someone's life. In general, the worst that happens is a barbecue. It gets ruined. It just doesn't have, like, it has that moral lesson. It is hilarious. It is so funny. But it doesn't have, like, it has character. It's not super, like, emotional, necessarily. Like, I don't think of it as, like, emotional, like Lisa's Wedding or Lisa's Substitute or I Married Marge or And Maggie Makes Three. Like, those are very I think that there's character in them, but they're also very much about, like, close emotional connections. And it has this a little bit between Lisa and Homer, but mostly it is about Lisa learning to be nicer to her family who, you know, when she's, you know, changed her belief system in a certain way. So that's a lot of time where we start, we just go, oh, this episode's kind of like this one. Is it better or worse? Then we can move up and down. I don't know. I would probably put it, I think, number 10.
So below Bart's Comet, above Lemon of Troy.
Yeah. I feel like it is as funny as Lemon of Troy. It has, easily. And it has that kind of, it has all that extra stuff on top. I would make it go above Lemon of Troy. And I feel like, I don't know, Bart's Comet just hits a little bit more. Like, I can, like, that the moment at the end of the episode where the whole town sings together, that, like, I don't know, it just, this episode doesn't have any of that just emotional punch to it, you know?
Yeah, there's no point where you're just sitting there and you get shivers like you do in Bart's Comet. Honestly, I could go anywhere between Black Widower and Lemon of Troy, so I am perfectly okay with it at number 10, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like it just doesn't have that one little bit of extra emotional punch to it that would put it up closer to the top. And I don't think it's as, I don't know, it is really hilarious, but I don't know. We have our own little metrics going on here, and it's doesn't seem to be an exact science, but I go by feel. I don't know. It feels like number 10 to me. Okay, Matt, number 10 on our list is Lisa the Vegetarian, Bart's Comet, number 9, right in front of it, Lemon of Troy, now at number 11, right behind it. Still number 1 on our list is Cape Fear, holding strong, getting some really tough competition lately, but it's holding tough. We'll see how long it can, or maybe it can just go the distance. Who knows? Last on our list is Homer's Odyssey at number 126. It will be supplanted at some point. We also got, Chris. We get a lot of fans that have same first names, and I think it was one of the answers for most underrated episode is Homer's Odyssey, because we do say every episode that is the lowest episode on the list. I don't hate Homer's Odyssey. I think it's just kind of mediocre. And when you're talking about The Simpsons, mediocre puts you at the bottom. As of now, like I said, we will get to episodes that rank below it, even though that I'm sure they're tighter. So we'll talk about when we got to them. There's plenty of episodes to go. You can find this list on our website, simplythesimpsonsshow.com, broken down by season. And in total, you can also find links to our Facebook, to our Twitter, to our RSS feed, links to our Twitter, I already said that. Links to our Patreon. If you think the show is worth a dollar or two, throw it our way. We really appreciate it. Also, you can... I don't know what's going on. Matt, what is our next episode?
Ooh, let's check the old listy list. What will Wikipedia tell me? It tells me our next episode is Treehouse of Horror number 6. So that'll be fun ranking that one.
This is the 3D Homer episode.
Oh, well, I know where that's going to go. Wait,
do you?
I do. I really enjoy that one.
I don't know where it goes. But we will rank the segments for that next week. I'm really excited about Minimoff. We're going to get a new Trails of Horror. They're going to bring back Grimy. Ghost of Grimy is going to be in the new Trails of Horror. I'm excited about that. Even if it's bad, we at least get authentic Frank Grimes, not Junior. None of that nonsense.
He happened to like hookers, Robbie. Are we besmirching the name of Frank Grimes?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I'm not a fan of Frank Grimes Jr.
Nah. I don't think anyone would call themselves a fan of him. Although, that is a not bad episode.
No, the episode itself is not bad. I don't like Frank. Okay, whatever. We'll eventually get to the episode, and we'll talk about it then.
Another few years.
Yeah, exactly. Before we go, you can find me on Twitter at MixMasterCereal. That's MixMasterCereal. Please check out my comic book podcast called Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Also, I'm starting a third podcast because I am a lunatic. It is called The Serial Fanaticist. Serial like that other podcast, and fanaticist like fanatic with IST on the end. There's a little bit of an intro episode up on iTunes. I think it most podcatchers populate from that, so you should be able to find it. I'd really appreciate it if you check it out. Maybe you like it, maybe you won't, but you know, it's about many things. I explain it in the zero episode. Matt does not participate in social media unless you're a certain level of Patreon backer. You will not find him.
That is accurate. However, I have applied for a position aboard the James Webb Space Telescope when it launches, I believe, either later this year or early next year. So unfortunately, I believe they're pointing at Proxima B first. So if you got a message, it's only 4.5 light years. Just ship it out there and hopefully I'll be the one to see it first.
Yeah, just do that.
Yep. It's 4.5 light years. So, you know, if you can get to 0.1C, it should only take a few thousand years.
Only. If they can get near the speed of light, wouldn't there be time dilation, and therefore
the message would basically not age, but we here on Earth still would. So if they sent themselves out there, they would probably be able to survive. But that would also be predicated on getting to the speed of light, because at the moment I don't believe you have any acceleration technology that could get anything close to the speed of light.
I thought ion drives are getting close.
But it would take probably about half the trip to accelerate, then you'd have to immediately start to decelerate.
All right, so wait 100 years until we have the technology necessary to get that fast, and then travel back in time and do it, is what Matt is saying.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching The Simpsons.